He's sitting by the, he better be sitting by the pool.
That's right. When you hear that rock and roll sound, you know it's only one thing and one thing only. It's Brooklyn Paper Radio live, this time on tape, from downtown Brooklyn, America's downtown, and the Brooklyn Paper Building in Metro Tech. I, of course, am Gersh Kuntzman of the New York Daily News, a great writer, but not as handsome a man as the man to my right, Vince DiMaselli, who is the editor of the Brooklyn Paper.
Yes.
And has a lot to talk about. And just so we know, so you listeners know, we have a special guest in the studio today. Ben Kuntzman is here. Ben, just say hi.
Hello.
There you go. We got Ben Kuntzman, who is my son. He's 9 years old. And I don't know if he's going to talk. I don't know if he's going to say anything. But he's enjoying a limonada. Which, what flavor is that? Is that orange? He's enjoying an aranciata limonada.
Aranciata.
San Pellegrino. And he's having some Swedish fish. So Father of the Year, Gersh Kuntzman, has given his son orange soda and Swedish fish. What do you think of that, Vince?
Are you dunking the fish in the soda? I would try that.
Anyway, we had a lot of fun.
Remember, Pop Rocks and Coca-Cola do not mix.
We had a lot of fun in the ample Brooklyn Paper Radio green room minutes ago. We were teaching Ben, who is a bit of a beatboxer. We were teaching about Mel Blanc.
Mel Blanc.
Do you remember Mel Blanc, Vince?
Yeah, Mel Blanc was the voice of 1,000 characters.
The man of 1,000 voices.
Yeah, well, he would do all the voices for all the old Warner Brothers cartoons. And a lot of people don't know this. He was the voice of Twiggy on Buck Rogers. Oh. And he did some voices in Strange Brew, the movie Strange Brew with Bob and Doug McKenzie.
Well, that's great to know. He also was on the Jack Benny Show for many years. So we taught Ben all about that. Ben, in a word, did you learn about Mel Blanc today?
Yes.
There it is. That one word from Ben Kuntzman.
That's a one-word answer. Good work.
Just so you know, I'm eating yesterday's tuna.
Yep.
Here's how it works. Just so you know how it works in a newsroom. I walk in. I'm hungry.
Mm-hmm.
Vince says, oh, there's some sandwiches in the break room. I go into the break room, and it's a freaking smorgasbord of sandwiches.
Well,
I mean,
if you consider a bunch of tuna fish sandwiches a smorgasbord, yes.
So I like tuna. I immediately grab a tuna wrap.
Yep.
I start eating it. I'm like, this tuna is really not that good. He's like, well, yeah, that's from yesterday.
It's yesterday's tuna.
Who wants yesterday's tuna?
Nope.
Nobody. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so I'm eating yesterday's tuna. If I don't make it through the show, Vince will pick it up. Now, as you know, we're brought by our sponsors, Village Care Max, Joseph Lichter, Atlas Meat Market, Atlas Steakhouse, couple of special guests, Vince. You don't even know about one of these.
Let me hear.
Joe Dorenson.
It's always a surprise.
Joe Dorenson is a historian, a Brooklyn historian, who is on the air with us today to talk about the 70th anniversary.
Of what?
What do you think happened 70 years ago, April 15th?
70 years ago.
So we're talking about 1947. 1947.
Taxes were due.
Taxes were due April 15th, 1947. Good guess. Another thing in Brooklyn. What's the most important thing in Brooklyn in the 40s? The Brooklyn Dodgers. What happened on April 15th, 1947?
First game under the lights.
Not a bad guess. Jackie Robinson. The
first televised game in the history of the Dodgers.
Jackie Robinson made his debut for the Dodgers on April 15th, 1947. We're going to talk to Joe Dorenson about that. And now we got a special guest you don't even know about.
Let me hear.
A lot of loyal listeners of Brooklyn Paper Radio will remember Sarah Zorn, who was our food writer when Gersh Kuntzman...
Was she the foodie-in-chief?
She was the foodie-in-chief. When Gersh Kuntzman discovered her out of obscurity in Bay Ridge, she became our foodie-in-chief for a couple of years.
Let me ask Ben that. Ben, was she the foodie-in-chief?
I don't really know.
Like, it's supposed to be a one-word answer.
One-word answer.
Maybe.
There you go. There you go, Ben Kuntzman. Thank you. Anyway, he's going to be our punctuation mark today. Ben, if we ask you to do a period or an exclamation mark or a question mark, you got to get on that.
There you go.
Anyway, Sarah Zorn was our foodie in chief. She's now appearing in a video about Obamacare. We're going to talk to her about that.
How did that come about?
Well, as you know, Dan Donovan, who represents Brooklyn and part of Staten Island, actually really the other way around.
The other way around, yeah.
Represents Brooklyn and Staten Island, is the only member of the New York City delegation who is a Republican and is the only member of the New York City delegation who is pushing a repeal and replace bill for Obamacare called the American Health Care Act, which is Paul Ryan's bill.
He could be the most interesting person in Congress in New York City.
He would be the most interesting person in Congress if he would talk to the newspapers when we call, but he does not. So we're going to have Sarah Zorn to talk a little bit about her efforts to get him to think again about repealing and replacing Obamacare. But I would be remiss if I didn't start the show by reaching out to Joe Dorenson.
We got to give him a call.
Let's call him. Let's call him.
Get some dialing music, Jimmy?
Yeah, Jimmy, a little dialing music.
Dialing music.
Dialing music.
What do you got in mind?
Anything that sounds like you're dialing a phone.
Johnny, come on.
some background music for dialing a phone.
He's only got two hands, Vince.
I've played with feet before.
That's not what I had in mind.
No. Try not to steal this number
off
of this.
Yeah, no, this is a very important number.
They can't hear the number.
Really?
I'm not so sure about that.
Are you going to talk to Joe? Because you've talked to him before.
No, you answer.
I'll start.
You always start.
That's ringing.
There you go.
Hello?
Is that Joe Dorenson?
Speaking.
Joe, this is Gersh Kuntzman of Brooklyn Paper Radio, and you are on the air live with me, a handsome man, Vince DiMaselli, and my son, Ben Kuntzman, who is a San Francisco Giants fan. Hello, Joe. Welcome to the show.
I'm very honored to be part of your program.
I got to tell you, that Joe Dorenson's a class act. Because we're honored to have him, but he's honored to be on our show.
Here. So there's lots of honor going around.
Right. And I want to commend your partner, Vince. The only difference between him now and then is a few gray hair, but he's a handsome matinee idol.
There you go.
He could have been a movie star, but he
no
was,
question about that, Joe.
I'm actually, yeah, Joe,
he
I'm,
was probably enamored of sports, and movies played second fiddle.
I will point out that it's a few gray hairs and a few less gray hairs, I might add. But the fact being, Joe is talking about the coverage we did of the 50th anniversary of Jackie Robinson breaking the color barrier in baseball, which we did back in 1997.
So that'd be 20 years ago.
There
Vince.
Was a huge, what would you call what we had over at LIU that year, Joe?
We had a conference
confab.
That was my finest hour in academe, and it brought together people from all over. We had great baseball players. We had newspaper players, writers like yourself.
Well,
and we had the great Jimmy Breslin, who died yesterday.
Yes, very sad loss for journalism.
Yes, yeah. It is. And he was just recovering from a brain tumor, as I recall, but Jackie's celebration brought all his marvels together, and he was terrific, as were all the other participants. I'll never forget Enos Slaughter trying to alibi his very cruel and deliberate attack on Jackie's ankle at first base in a game between the Dodgers and the Cardinals.
Now, Joe, that's the game, baby. That's the
yeah.
game. You go in spikes high.
Well,
yes.
You know.
But he was a first baseman at that time. So he was coming off the bag, and everyone who saw that play, even some of his teammates like Stan Musial, recognized that Slaughter was out to maim Jackie. He later, of course, spoke at our conference and said that Jackie accepted no quarter and gave no quarter, and he played the game with all deliberate speed.
There you go. Well, that nice little civil rights reference there. Let's backtrack for a second, Joe. You are, as I don't know if all of our listeners know, but you are an expert on the Brooklyn Dodgers and are organizing, again, another conference, I believe, at the Brooklyn Historical Society in April, right?
Right. I'm not organizing. I'm a participant.
Okay.
And this is a tribute to Jackie's staying power as a major figure. Not only did he transform baseball, but he changed America for
There's
the
no
better.
Question. No question about that. So let's start with the beginning.
Yes.
April 15th, 1947. I'm a Brooklyn kid. I bought a ticket, probably, you know, 50 cents. I'm in the upper deck. I don't know. I haven't been following the papers. I don't know about Jackie Robinson coming from Montreal. I don't know about his signing. And I'm in the audience, and all of a sudden, the Brooklyn Dodgers take the field, and there's a black guy.
Right.
How revolutionary was that in 1947?
It was a major step forward. Of course, there was an earlier figure, but that was in the 19th century.
Mm.
His name was Walker, and he played in 1884, and a great player for the Chicago Cubs refused to play with him, and that was Cap Anson.
Mm-hmm.
And from that point on, 1884 till 1947, no black player was allowed to participate in Major League Baseball.
Do you remember Cap Anson's middle name?
No, I don't.
You don't know Cap Racist Anson. It was actually his middle name.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I didn't know if you knew that. So, Joe, Jackie Robinson takes the field. And
right.
baseball changes forever right then. But one of the great things, and I know you have written about this and talked about this, is not only was this was not tokenism. Jackie Robinson was amazing.
Right. He was arguably the greatest athlete in America. Remember, in 1939, as a football player, he averaged 12 yards a carry for the UCLA Bruins. And even then, he was second fiddle to Kenny Washington, who was the star of that team.
Mm-hmm.
He also led the Pacific Conference in basketball in scoring 2 years in a row. In fact, he was also a broad jumper. He beat his brother Mac's record for the long jump now. It used to be called the broad jump, but I guess feminists opposed that rubric. Anyway, what Jackie could do was unbelievable. Duke Snyder recalls the scene from his California pass where Jackie was actually doing the long jump, and he actually went from the long jump track and field competition to the baseball field, and he put on a uniform. And so he was playing two sports simultaneously. He also won a ping pong championship in high school. There was not a sport that Jackie didn't excel in. Maybe swimming, because swimming was denied to black youngsters. In fact, mm-hmm. Jackie was arrested for jumping into a segregated pool at night. But Branch Rickey did not pick Jackie because he was the best Negro leaguer. Jackie would concede he was not the best, but he was best suited to become the pioneer.
Well, now this is the question now, because like I said, I'm a white kid in the audience, and I see this guy run onto the field. There's going to be taunts. There's going to be threats. There's going to be Enos Country Slaughter jumping on your ankle. They picked Jackie because he was just a great man, in addition to being a great athlete, right?
He didn't drink. He didn't smoke. He was engaged to be married. He was a college student in an era where that was not very common.
Mm-hmm.
He dropped out a few credits short of a degree because he saw no future for him in this segregated world. And he became an officer and a gentleman thanks to the intervention of the Brown bomber, Joe Lewis, who actually had contacts in the White House, a very different White House from the one today. And he persuaded some officials to allow Jackie to take officer's training.
Wow.
So Jackie became a lieutenant, a leader of men. And he was not a passive Uncle Tom type of guy. He demanded equal opportunity to buy things at the PX. And he actually alienated some of his superior officers. And one of the tragedies, Jackie, was at Fort Riley, Kansas, that's in the north. And he refused to play on the football team because the commander demanded that he play football, integrated, but baseball was excluded from his repertoire due to segregation. So the football team was going to play, this is the Army team, was going to play the University of Missouri. But the University of Missouri, totally segregated at the time, a slave state during the Civil War, actually demanded that Jackie be left home, left on the fort. And Jackie refused. And for this, he was punished and sent to Fort Hood in Texas, where he was subsequently court-martialed for demanding his rights in a bus that was on federal property and therefore not immune to segregation.
Wow.
And despite, and maybe because of his fame as an athlete, he was able to gain, through the use of an excellent defense lawyer, an acquittal. Hmm. At which point his commanding officer really admired Jackie and supported him, but the commanding officer's superior wanted blacks to maintain their secondary status. And he offered Jackie a command of a regiment in the European theater, and Jackie turned him down. Justifiably, he said, if I'm not good enough to play football or baseball in an integrated setting, I'm not good enough to lead my men into death in Europe.
You know, the irony, though, Joe, Vinny wrote this article 20 years ago. Jackie Robinson was a Republican.
Yes, he was, though his wife, Rachel, to this day, protests that designation. She calls him a independent, but he was a Republican. But remember, the Republican Party in 1947 was very different animal than the Republican Party today.
Sure. And that the animal that the Republican Party today is the hyena. What was the animal then?
Well, it included, ironically, it was the Southern Democrats who were the racists and
right.
the segregationists.
You're right.
Northern Republicans like Javits and Rockefeller and Lodge were basically very humane and compassionate.
A wise owl, if you will. A wise owl.
Yes.
So where did those Republicans go, Joe? Let's just break character for a second. Baseball is one thing. Where did those Republicans go?
Yeah. Well, you know, most of the successful Republicans in sports come from baseball.
Mm-hmm.
One exception was Stan Musial, who was a registered Democrat from the get-go. He came from Pennsylvania, coal mining area. He was a working-class guy. I have an anecdote I'd like to share with your listeners.
I mean, I hope it's dirty, but go ahead.
One of my dearest friends is a doctor in St. Louis, and he was actually Stan Musial's doctor. His name is Jerry Medoff. Went to high school and college with him. And every time Musial would come into his office, he was always smiling, even though he had cancer and he had other ailments, which eventually took his life at 90 years plus.
Oh.
He said, "Why are you always smiling despite your ailments?" And Musial replied, "Dr. Medoff, if you have a lifetime batting average of .332, you'd be smiling as well."
Oh, jeez.
And I thought that was a wonderful
secret of life. How are we all going to recreate that, Joe? My lifetime batting average in softball is like .260.
Well, but softball is harder to hit.
Much harder game, yeah. Thank you for that, Joe.
Because the pitcher is so close and that ball can do wicked things.
Yeah, it just does wicked things, that ball. I can't hit it.
Yeah.
I want to ask you one question about Jackie's legacy. I'm not letting Vince in here. Vince had his glory 20 years ago. I want to ask you about Jackie's legacy.
Right.
Now, everyone talks about, Jackie Robinson's legacy is integrated baseball, obviously. Gentleman, the whole bit about everything. But I think the legacy.
Yeah, the legacy is mixed because, you know, we are a nation that discards planned obsolescence, our heroes, along mm-hmm. with our junk. And so if you look at Jackie's trajectory after he retired from baseball, he never was offered a job,
mm-hmm.
although he was eminently qualified, more so than some of the retreads that have been managing baseball for years. So he becomes vice president of Chock Full of Nuts.
The Heavenly Coffee.
Yeah.
Yes.
Better coffee a millionaire's money can't buy.
They changed that. They changed that to billionaires now.
And William Black, whose real name was Schwartz, was Jewish, and he offered Jackie this job at $25,000 a year, a large sum of money, to manage personnel at Chock Full of Nuts. I love Chock Full of Nuts. As a college student, I lived on Chock Full of Nuts 50 Cent Special, which in 1954, when I entered college, was a bowl of soup, nutted bread with cream mm-hmm. cheese
yeah.
schmeared on top.
A little schmear.
And a black server. It was all black, but it was the cleanest place in town, and it enabled poor students like myself to survive the rigors of higher education.
Right, but what I was actually saying was I thought Jackie's legacy, you went off on a different tangent.
Yeah.
I thought Jackie's legacy, ultimately, today, is by integrating baseball, the talent level of baseball jumped, I would say, probably three steps.
Oh, absolutely. You know, if you look at the All-Star competition prior to Jackie's arrival, the American League, thanks to Joe DiMaggio, Ted Williams, and a whole host of stars, dominated this competition. As soon as the National League followed the principle or the precedent of the Brooklyn Dodgers. They dominated. They ran off winning streaks, consecutive winning streaks against the American League. So if you stick to baseball, what Jackie did, and he did more for the rest of us in society, but what he did is he brought the Negro League style, which was a sort of retrograde. It was the Ty Cobb style. It was aggressive baseball, speed, running, one run at a time, and it was speed and power, which the Negro Leagues actually represented and projected onto the screen. So if you look at the Dodgers, they quickly amalgamated a team that was dominated by black stars. The next year, Roy Campanella came.
Mm-hmm.
The year after that, Don Newcomb. And then in 52, Joe Black and Sandy Amoros, who made a great catch beat the Yankees to prove that God is not always a Yankee fan. This was breakthrough because the 1955 Dodgers, when Don Newcomb was pitching, had a majority of players on the field who were African-American.
I got one question about Newcomb. You know, my father grew up in Brooklyn. And when I was growing up, all he ever said to me was, Don Newcomb was a pitcher who once pitched both ends of a doubleheader and had a career batting average of .320. Now, that can't be true.
That is true.
Oh, wow.
In fact, he was
sorry, Dad.
Likened to the black Babe Ruth. He often pinch hit for the Dodgers.
That I knew.
And, again, that was part of the Negro League culture, too. Hitters and pitchers were not divorced. They were expected to participate to the full.
Thanks for mentioning my divorce, Joe. I really appreciate that.
Yeah.
If you got a corkscrew, just put it right in my heart, okay? I appreciate it.
Sorry.
In the Negro Leagues, did the pitchers play other positions during the course of the week?
One of the famous players whom I met and interviewed a number of years ago, he's since gone, was Double Duty Radcliffe.
Duty.
Yeah.
He would pitch one game of doubleheader and catch the second.
See, I often would call Vince Double Duty, but for a totally different reason.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
I'm not going to touch that.
Yeah. And I got my son Ben here, who's all of 9 years old, and he's a San Francisco Giants fan, which I respect because the San Francisco Giants, although they left New York, have been a very classy organization for most of the last 50, 60 years. Ben, Ben, do you have a question for a baseball historian on Jackie Robinson? He's saying no, but you can ask him what he thinks of the Giants' chances this year. No, doesn't want to ask you, but what do you think of the Giants' chances?
I'll respond. I think they have a great manager, and since pitching is 80% of the game, I think their pitching staff looks very impressive. And I have a fondness for the Giants, too, because my father was a Giant fan. Mm-hmm. In fact, I came from a very dysfunctional family. My mother rooted for the Dodgers because she was ultra-radical. She was integrating life even before Jackie. My father, who was was born in Europe but grew up in Jersey City. Now, remember, the Jersey City Giants were the Giants' top farm team.
Yep.
He rooted for the Giants, and I became a Yankee fan because I identified with Joe DiMaggio, my moniker, Joe D. Mm-hmm. I loved pinstripe suits, and I loved his style. He just exuded class.
There's no
and
happening.
I know he's been his legend has been tarnished by Richard Ben Kramer's book. I think that was a hatchet job. And one of my students, former students, is publishing a book, if it's not out already. He and his brother, who is Joe DiMaggio's last and favorite doctor, Rock Positano.
Ah, Rock, Dr. Rock. Yeah, he was a foot doctor.
Yes, orthopedic.
Yep.
And anyway, his brother was my student, and he told me about Joe, and this book has some amazing revelations about Joe's sex life and a botched operation that rendered Joe impotent.
Oh, now you got to mention my divorce again.
Tool. I hope this will pass the censor in the business. And he was an amazing Coxman as well, off the field as well as on the field.
Well, our sensor is the 9-year-old sitting next to us.
Wait,
so.
Hold on a second. Joe, are you saying Joe DiMaggio had an operation that rendered him impotent?
Yes. According to Rock and his brother, John Positano, he went in for minor surgery, and the surgeon punctured a nerve that was connected to his decoration, mm-hmm. Which is what a schmuck is. According to the Jews.
Yes. Joe, you can use the word penis. I mean,
yeah.
The schmuck is any guy who leaves the shower to take a leak.
Okay. Well, wait a minute. When was the operation?
That's a revelation, and it may account, I think, for his mood swings. Richard Ben Kramer depicts Joe as cheap and nasty. In the 30s, at the peak of his career and early 40s, he was a very engaged, very generous guy with the younger players. Mm-hmm. He helped Phil Rizzuto find a mate for life, Cora. Joe Page, who had a drinking problem, great lefty relief pitcher, he would take care of him financially. So the late Joe DiMaggio has a personality change, which... is never fully explained, except maybe Rock is onto something.
What year did
I
he...
want to mention something about Joe. Joe was responsible for making Jackie Robinson possible, because in 1937, a famous communist sports writer named Lester Rodney, who graced our podium in 1997, interviewed Joe DiMaggio. And he asked Joe, who is the most difficult pitcher he ever faced? And Joe, without batting an eyelash, said, Satchel Paige. Mm-hmm. So that created a whole Satchel Paige emphasis and, you might say, ultimate fan club. And the fact that Satchel could not enter Major League Baseball in 1948, when he was already in his mid-40s, if not older, is the shame of our society,
yeah.
Because there was unquestionably is one of the super players.
By the time he got into the game, I believe he was in his late 40s, if not early 50s.
Right, that's right. But and he was a good hitter, too, by the way.
But he pitched till he was about 110, I believe.
Yeah. So.
No,
he's still pitching.
He was brought back by Bill Veeck. After he left Cleveland, he played for the St. Louis Browns. And briefly, I think Veeck, when he bought the Chicago White Sox, he tried to bring, but by that time, people were gaining on him, to use his own phraseology.
Nice. When was that operation?
Yeah, how old was DiMaggio when he?
I think it was right around the time of Marilyn Monroe breakup.
Yeah, because you don't marry Marilyn Monroe and then have an operation.
Shoot blanks.
It was after that.
It wasn't the shooting blanks. he didn't load the pistol. Is what his problem was.
This revelation was published page 6 of the New York Post.
I believe it.
A few months ago, but I think it's best to hold judgment until the book is available. It should be out very soon.
Did you ever read The Silent Season of a Hero by Gay Talese?
Yes. That was the first demolition job on Joe, and I remember one of the quotes. Joe says, "I'm not special. I'm just trying to get along. Gay Talese, by the way, also did a hatchet or a number on Frank Sinatra.
Frank Sinatra has a cold.
Yes. So,
Joe, we're tearing down the heroes.
He said some nice things about Donald Trump, so I'm beginning to question his judgment on life and personalities. That was the first revelation that there was something amiss. But, Bob Lipside, who happens to be a friend of mine, I went to college during his era, and he came to our Jackie Robinson conference, reflected that when he was a rookie reporter for the New York Times, and it was spring training, and Joe said, get this kid a jacket, and he got a Yankee jacket, and that was a sign of the compassionate Joe DiMaggio. And he quoted, Lipsy quoted DiMaggio in another article saying, Joe was smart enough to realize he wasn't smart enough to answer questions from snooping newspaper people.
Right.
So he shut up, and that started that the wall.
Well, do you remember Paul Simon's famous line, "Where have you gone, Joe DiMaggio?" About when DiMaggio was a great hero, and
right.
he never understood that line. Even they finally
right.
met.
He thought that he was poking fun.
Yeah,
at him.
Yeah, yeah. It's
and
bizarre.
He said, "Well, what did you mean by that?" And of course, Paul Simon tried to explain it to a very fretful DiMaggio.
Yeah, well, DiMaggio at that point was an impotent old man.
He also wanted to use Mickey Mantle, but it just didn't fit.
Where
the lyric.
Have you gone, yeah. Mickey Mantle?
It just no,
doesn't
don't work.
Yeah. Doesn't work.
Mantle Schmantle, we have AB. That was the cry. In 1950, early in the season, Mantle was hitting .470 through early May. And so there was a big headline because Mantle was emerging as a superstar. And Mantle Schmantle, we have AB. Of course, AB turned out to be... not quite in that league.
You know what ultimately killed Mantle is he had too much blood in his alcohol system.
That's true.
Thank you. I'm here all week.
Yeah. Well, you know, Mantle was one of these sad examples of excess. He thought, like his father and uncle, he would die young, and so he burnt the candle at both ends with apologies to Edna St. Vincent Millay. And he drank to excess,
yes.
which, of course, diminished his skills along with his injuries.
This is one of the greatest interviews, Joe, not because I love talking baseball, but you're so literary. You're throwing in Edna St. Vincent Millay. You threw in a little Brown versus Board of Education earlier.
Well, here's the significance of Jackie. If there's no Jackie, there's no Barack Obama.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Just think about it. Jackie breaks the color barrier 47. In 54, 7 years later, the desegregation, 9-0, occurs.
Yes.
1 year after that, Rosa Parks did what Jackie did in 44. He refused to go to the back of a bus.
Oh, I thought you were going to say she took two and hit to right.
Yeah. Well, and then you have the first civil rights legislation since Reconstruction in the 50s. And, of course, after Jack Kennedy's assassination, Lyndon Johnson pushes the envelope all the way to integration, and Martin Luther King said just before he was assassinated, he said, "Jackie made my work that much easier," and in effect, he said to Wyatt T. Walker, that's the source of the quote, "No Jackie, no Martin Luther King."
But when they say no Jackie, I think that's more of a metaphor, isn't it? Ultimately, there would have been a Jackie. There would have been someone.
Maybe. But if the experiment failed, could you imagine what that would have done? See, as I argue in several articles I wrote on the subject, Jackie created a new image for the black persona.
Mm-hmm.
Even when you had great athletes, they were brutes like Jack Johnson or clowns like the Harlem Globetrotters. So you had the stereotype reinforced by sports figures. Jackie, on the other hand, was dignified, daunting, different. And he had the ability to speak in sentences that parsed. He had a forum, and he used that forum, a bully pulpit. I remember as a child listening to the New York Times Youth Forum, emceed by Dorothy Gordon, wonderful woman, and Jackie was a guest, and he took down the New York Yankees, my team, because they refused to hire black players. And they had in their system some outstanding players, and they refused to bring them up. And George Weiss rationalized, well, most of our players are from the South. They wouldn't get along. It would be it would break the unity of the team. Vic Power, case in point, was a brilliant first baseman. The reason the Yankees traded him away to the Philadelphia Athletics, later the Cleveland Indians got him, was that he, as a first baseman, he caught everything with one hand. That was the way the Negro Leaguers did it. He was supposed to use both hands, even at first base, catching a ball. Secondly, he dated white women. And then he was notorious for pushing the envelope against segregation. He went into, when he was playing for the Kansas City team, Yankee Farm team, he went into a segregated restaurant, and he asked to be served, and the waitress said, "We don't serve niggers here." And he replied, "That's cool, because I don't eat them."
Nice.
Which was a joke later used by Dick Gregory.
Very good line. Wow, that's funny. But let me ask you.
But Dick, you know, so they saw Vic Power. So they finally get, in 1955, they get Elston Howard. And what does Casey Stengel say? "I finally got me a nigger, and he's the only one who can't run."
I mean, it's a direct quote, so we're going to allow the N-word.
We'll allow it.
We're going to allow the N-word, but just for the record.
Yes, I'm not supposed to use it.
No, no, it's a direct
quote. I'm quoting him directly.
You're quoting him directly. Direct okay, we will allow
but
that.
But let me ask you, was...
Thank you, censor.
Was Branch Rickey really trying to change society, or was he just trying to win ball games?
Both.
Really?
My friend Lee Loewenfish wrote the definitive biography. Murray Polner had written an earlier one.
Everybody you know is Jews.
Yeah.
I love this. Lee Loewenfish.
There's a whole literature about how the Jews helped Jackie.
They changed his name at Ellis Island, Lee Loewenfish, right?
I don't know. Lee and I went to Columbia at different decades, but I hired him to teach history for me as an adjunct, and he also taught music. He's a jazz buff, so he's a multi-talented freelancer. Anyway, he argues, and we've disputed this publicly, he argues that Branch Rickey, true, was a businessman, but he had a real, genuine, altruistic motivation. I sense that he was more of an operator, and regardless of his motives, the outcome was positive.
There you go.
I'll give you one example where he manipulated Robinson. In 1949, the year of Robinson's great year, best year, when he won the MVP, he hit 342. He 16 home runs, 37 stolen bases, 124 runs batted in, 122 runs scored, Wow. Fielded superbly. He was asked in the middle of that season to come to Washington to testify against Paul Robeson, about whom I've written. Robeson, earlier that year in a Paris conference, said that black soldiers, Negro soldiers at that time, would not lift their guns against the soldiers of the Soviet Union because Soviet Union had raised all people, all races, to the highest level then. Jackie Robinson was told by Branch Rickey, by his wife, and Lester Granger, head of the Urban League at the time, that he must confront this and say the opposite, that black soldiers are loyal Americans and they will fight for their country against any enemy. It's fascinating because today we had the hearings about the conspiracy of the Russian government to fix the election in favor of Trump. Anyway, what Jackie said was he made mention of Robeson's beautiful bass voice, and he said, "I won't be tempted to follow his beautiful voice. I have different opinions." And 20 years later, shortly before he died, he wrote the fourth version of his autobiography called I Never Had It Made. And he said, and I'm quoting liberally, maybe not totally accurately, he said, "Paul Robeson gave up everything to serve his people. While I still defend what I said, had I known then what I know now, I would never criticize him in public, because I'm a black man in a white world, and I never had it made."
Nice.
That was the title of the book.
There you go. We got it. We got to get going. But I just wanted you to tell us about this event that's coming up at the historic
society. What I know is what I read in the papers. To quote Will Rogers, I was asked by the acting president of St. Francis College to give a talk. Now, I had met him at LIU, where he was involved in the honors program. But he was part of the LIU brain drain. So he is now at the top, and he asked me, would I come? And I said, of course. Now, you have to understand that I'm undergoing radiation treatment for cancer, and I'm not in my best form.
Jesus.
But I needed a respite from illness, and I felt honoring Jackie would be honoring a life's work, mine and Jackie's and anybody who was involved in civil rights.
If this isn't your best form, I don't know what, I can't imagine what you're normally like, Joe.
Yes. Well, what I'm planning to do, if you attend, you'll see, I'm going to reenact, if there's enough room on the dais, his greatest moment in sports, where he made a diving catch off Eddie Wakis in the extra inning game, that the last game of the 1951 National League race.
Yeah, Wakis was a bum, by the way.
He was a good fielder, and he was also handsome enough to warrant a would-be assassination from a lover. He became the template for...
It happens to Vince all the time, by the way.
Yeah, well, he's a good-looking guy. He's the template for the wonderful Bernard Malamud novel, The Natural.
The Natural.
Okay. All right, listen, we got to go, Joe, but I want to tell the listeners that it opens April 6th.
It's free and open to the public, and it runs... Yeah. My event is 12 to 1:30, but to get in, you have to call the St. Francis office. You have to reserve a spot for yourself, but do it quickly.
But I was talking about the larger exhibit at the Brooklyn Historical Society. Opens April 6th.
That's right.
Your event is on April 15th, if I'm not mistaken.
No, April 5th.
Well, April 5th. Anyway, 10 days before the anniversary, April 5th, there will be an unbelievable event. And Johnny, our producer, is going to put it up on our website so everyone knows. But if you're just tuning in now, you missed an incredible conversation with Joe Dorenson, Vince DiMaselli, and Gersh Kunstman, of course, about Jackie Robinson's legacy. Joe, I want to thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
You're a great man.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Not as handsome as Vince.
And just one last, you know, the Daily News gave us excellent coverage.
That's a surprise.
And one of the writers, whose name eludes me now, it's a senior moment, actually quoted me, because I got into trouble with the vice president of the university, who was really on my case, and needlessly. And I told him to perform an unnatural act on himself.
Nice.
Three times.
I don't know what's so unnatural about
it. And I have it somewhere in my scrapbook. When I see you, I'll give you his name. He wrote it up, and it became a kind of cause célèbre on campus.
There you go.
So I told this guy to do that, and after the successful conference concluded, he came over to me, and we made peace.
Oh, thank you. I guess he didn't have to do it alone anymore.
Well, but he didn't take me literally.
I'm glad.
He actually was fired because he had sex. I hope we're not on radio anymore.
You got the ding. Go ahead. He had sex with who?
He had sex with one of his associates, and he forgot to turn down the window shade. He was spotted, and so I guess I had the last laugh.
That is
and
fantastic.
He had the last fornication on campus.
Well, you got to cover your tracks, Gersh.
I always close the windshield.
Yeah.
All right, well, you got my 9-year-old listening to this. That's fantastic. Joe Dorenson, everybody.
Okay, take care.
Thank you for joining us.
God bless.
All right, we'll see you. Best of luck to you, and stay healthy, okay?
Okay. Thank you.
Johnny, we got to pay a couple of bills. And it's funny to talk. Can you get me some music? Ben, my son, is here. Ben, I'm going to ask you a quick question. It's a one-word answer. Have you ever seen a dentist who provides quality care at an affordable price? Yes or no?
No.
No, you never did. You know why, Ben? Because you live in Park Slope, where the dentists are expensive. Well, I know Joseph Lichter. He's got a state-of-the-art office in Midwood. He is going to charge you nothing. I got the prices right here.
Get the prices out, Gersh.
Zoom bleaching, $395. Dental implants, $12.50. Invisalign, the adult braces behind your teeth, $39.95. And the veneer special, $7.50. That's nothing. He's also the dentist for the New York Riveters. They're a hockey team. You know they need good teeth. He's going to give you a smile makeover. All you got to do is call him. 718-339-7878. you mention Gersh Kunstman, you mention Vince DiMicelli, you get a discount.
Yeah, there you go.
Your smile is our priority. Joseph Lichter DDS, 1420 Avenue P in Midwood, and always online at josephlichterdds.com.
At Atlas Steakhouse, your stomach is their priority, because at Atlas Steakhouse, you get a unique dining experience. First, you choose your steak, and every cut there is aged to tender perfection on site. You can pair it with one of their vintage wines. They have an extensive wine list, or with an Atlas Steakhouse signature cocktail. What's your favorite, Gersh?
Oh, I love the Godfather.
There you go. Enjoy a succulent appetizer as their master chef crafts your choice cut as you desire. And when your main course arrives, you'll understand why at Atlas Steakhouse, they always offer you a cut above the rest. Atlas Steakhouse at 943 Coney Island Avenue. Visit them on the web at atlasstake.com.
You know, Vince, it was funny to talk to Joe Dorenson, who is old.
Yes.
But if you notice, he's kind of a Randy bastard. A Randy old bastard.
He seemed to be that
way,
yeah.
He wanted to talk about cursing. He wanted to talk about sex. Great man. So I would say to him, Joe, if you're still listening, see what's possible when healthcare gets personal. You call Village Care Max, a Medicaid-managed long-term plan that keeps you in your home and in your community as long as possible. They got a team of healthcare professionals. They work with your doctor. And the best part about it is it's all free. It's part of your Medicare. I always mix those up.
Get it straight.
It's Medicare. Anyway, you want more information, you just call Village Care Max at 800-469-6292, or you visit them at villagecaremax.org. Village Care Max, live the life and play the baseball you want to live.
Yeah, do it. Do it. You know, sometimes you can't make it to Atlas Steakhouse, Gersh, so what you do is you call up our friends at Atlas Meat Market.
Ben, you should be listening to this because Ben loves Omaha steaks. So tell us why these are better.
Well, they're better because it's right here in Brooklyn.
Right.
Why go to Omaha?
You don't need to go to Omaha.
When you could call Atlas Meat Market.
Atlas Meat Market.
Atlas Meat Market.
So they'll box it up and they'll ship it anywhere in the country.
They'll just take it wherever you want it to go. Your choice cuts, your favorite cuts of steak, veal, chicken. No pork. No, it is halal. And they'll ship it wherever you want to go. Now, you're at work.
I am at work.
You're on your way home. You need a steak delivered. They'll do that too.
Wow.
So give them a call. Atlas Meat Market. They are open from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. today. They are at 387 Avenue X. And they are at 347-915-2000. You can call them right now.
I got to, Ben, you had the Omaha steak once and you went crazy for it. How about I get you an Atlas steak?
Sure.
There you go. Can you call them right now and get me a steak?
I think you should order it up, yeah.
All right, we got to cut out.
We do.
So it was great to talk to Joe Dorenson about the Brooklyn Dodgers, but we're going to now reach out to Sarah Zorn, who was our foodie in chief for many years. She's a food writer, and I didn't know she was married.
I did.
I didn't know she had a whole personal life, and I didn't know her husband suffers from ulceritis, something. Anyway, she'll tell us about it.
She got the ulcers.
Yeah, well, the Obamacare, Affordable Care Act, apparently saved his life.
And
now she's part of a video effort to get information to Dan Donovan, Congressman Dan Donovan of Staten Island in Brooklyn. So I'm just going to reach out to her.
We got 12 minutes.
I know, and I'm going to ask her what this is all about. And first, she's obviously going to celebrate what a great job I did as her editor, because that's what we do on the show.
Yeah, no, it's nice to have that. Well, there we go.
How do you ship a steak?
Hey there. I haven't gotten a call from this number in a long time.
Well, Sarah Zorn, it's Gersh Kunstman, and you're on the air with Gersh Kunstman, handsome Vince DiMicelli, and my son, Ben Kunstman, who's a man of few words. How are you, Sarah Zorn?
I am doing okay. Hey, fellas.
It's good to hear from our former foodie-in-chief.
Now, Sarah...
I sure wish we were talking about something fun like food today.
Oh, we still are.
You know, I love to talk about Atlas Meat Market and their delicious steaks.
Sarah, you know, we're going to talk about the Affordable Care Act in a second, but before we start, this is what we do when we reach out to any Brooklyn Paper alum. We always say, Sarah, how good a boss was I?
You know what? You always get credit as my mentor. Always, 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 and you always will. When I came to you, I was a mere babe in the woods, and I developed a really thick skin, and that was necessary. And wow. I learned how to dish it as well as receive it, and that is also an important skill.
All right, well, that's fantastic.
When you come to the table at the Brooklyn Paper, either you dish it out or you take it, Or maybe you do both.
And I learned not to bury the lead. That may be the most important takeaway.
So that's great. So now we've covered the most important topic, which is our awesomeness. Now, Sarah, I didn't know this. You had a whole life outside of the Brooklyn Paper. Obviously, you're married. You got a husband. You got a dog. And you are now part of an effort, a video effort. And I'll give the website on our website. Johnny, put up this video if you can. A video effort to try to remind Republican Congressman Dan Donovan, who is the only Republican in the New York delegation, that the Affordable Care Act, a.k.a. Obamacare, is actually working for a lot of people, and including yourself. So why don't you give us the little thumbnail of why it's working for you?
Well, I mean, certainly as a food writer, I think you guys could attest to the fact I never got any sort of coverage, but being a healthy person, that's like neither here nor there. I do have a husband who I married anyway, and I've never regretted it, despite the fact that he does have a pre-existing condition called ulcerative colitis.
There it is, ulcerative.
He's had it for really all of his adult life. He had already had it for years when I met him. And the thing about UC, which is a disease of the colon, it is treatable, but it's not curable. Mm. When it is treated and carefully controlled, really the sufferer should be able to live a really normal life. When it's not treated, it's entirely debilitating. So being that my husband, as a young adult with this condition, was never able to receive treatment because he was blocked, it was a very well-documented pre-existing condition, he certainly wasn't able to just buy into an insurance plan, and he wasn't able to get coverage through an employer either, because unchecked, this disease, again, I mean, it left him bedridden, so he was never able to hold down a job for long enough to, you know, to receive insurance anyway.
So who saved his life? Who saved his life?
Who saved his life? The ACA saved his life when he was able to get insurance and finally able to get actual pills that for his condition. For all of the years prior, we were like trying to kind of fight our way with this very touch and go plan of every time he had a flare up, he would just lay in bed and we would try to give him chicken soup and we would cobble together money where we could to buy a bottle of prednisone of steroids. It's not a treatment plan. So he was uninsured for all of these years, and his disease was really, it had free reign over his body. It ran rampant. And it wasn't until the ACA, when he was able to get insured, when he was able to see actual doctors, actual gastroenterologists, and receive actual treatment, we've been married for 13 years, and I, save for the last, say, three of them, I never really knew what my husband was, who he was, as a fully functioning, healthy person. And that's crazy. I received a brand new husband in these last 3 years.
Thanks to Obamacare, because that's what you're saying when you say ACA, correct?
That whatever you want to call it, Obamacare, the nice. ACA, same difference.
Well, there you go.
I think Vince has a tough question for you.
No, I don't.
Okay. Well, I have a tough question for you. All right. Okay. So Sarah's part of a video that features a couple of...
Yeah, I want to hear about this, because I wanted to watch it. You wouldn't let me, so tell me all about it.
I wouldn't let him. Listen, you're about half a dozen people whose stories touch the heart.
Yeah.
Yours is just one of them. I watched the video. Look, here's the problem. We've got Republicans. They're not... I'm not saying anything bad about Republicans. Dan Donovan, if you're listening, again, I know you're a decent guy, and you probably are touched by the plight of people. The Republicans have a different philosophy about health care. So they believe that their AHCA, the American Health Care Act, will still allow you and your husband to get coverage. Why is that flawed?
They don't believe that. They've said in so many words they don't believe that, and they've been caught out saying it, So our Secretary of Health has said, and he didn't apologize for it, that, you know, it would be better for the economy if people with cancer just got on and died already. Paul Ryan said that we have almost achieved our goal of ruining healthcare. They don't believe it. They say it every so often to convince just enough people that, you know, the government actually has the best interests of the American people in mind. They know perfectly well that this is not going to cover, certainly not my husband and I, certainly not seniors. I mean, we don't even really quite understand now that this system of not subsidies, what we're receiving right now through the ACA is subsidies based on income. So it means that instead of paying multiple $1,000s premium per month, that based on our income, my husband and I pay, currently we pay $20 a month. In the past, we've paid $600. It ranges based on, you know, how financially fit we are. So it makes a lot of sense. Sometimes we pay a lot, sometimes we pay a little. It makes a lot of sense. What the GOP plan proposes is to not have subsidies at all, is to have a once-a-year tax credit, even though we'll have to continue paying out premiums every month. But one time a year, we will receive, I think, a flat $3,000. It's not at all dependent on income. It's dependent on age. And the younger you are, I guess you get a little more. So we're talking about seniors. They're slated to pay as much as up to half their income a year on health insurance. So certainly it is not going to help my husband and I, who will get at the most $3,000 a year for our health. And that's when we're paying right now without the subsidy, the plan that we're on, it's around $1,500 per month. So even if it, and that's not what it would be, because it's been clearly, you know, it's been put out there by the CBO that premiums are going to skyrocket.
Right.
Right now in the ACA, what we would be paying without a subsidy is $1,500 per month. We're paying $20, but say $1,500 per month. Even if it was $1,500 a month for the premium for my husband and I, when if the GOP plan was to kick in, we would be receiving $3,000 for the whole year. So you do the math.
We would be paying
$1,500 12 times a year, get $3,000 back for that. That is a drop in the bucket. So you're creating a nation of impoverished people as well. My husband and I, we're just barely clinging to it, but we're middle class. We do okay. We don't really get anything from the government besides subsidized health care. And it helps us to be middle class and impoverished. I think the Republicans have made plain that they have incredible disdain for poor people, and they're going to be creating more of us by the buttload. So it doesn't really make sense for anybody.
Good use of the term buttload. Okay, yeah. Let me ask the tough question, though. If I had a Republican on the phone right now, he would say, oh, no, Sarah's got it all wrong. This plan is going to help. Who is it going to help? Is it just helping the wealthy who now don't have to subsidize it? Who is this plan helping?
It would appear so. I mean, they haven't given us any reason to believe that anything that they're doing is in the interest of anybody but billionaires. And if you look at this plan point by point, yes, that is who it helps. It helps billionaires. They're getting a tax cut from it. They're getting a tax cut on the back of poor and middle-class Americans.
But isn't that tax cut just going to trickle down to us?
Oh, yes. That's been trickle-down economics is a totally proven game plan.
There goes trickle down DiMaselli again. You know, Sarah, they call me tax and spend cuntsman here. They call Vince trickle down DiMaselli. Now,
yeah,
I got to tell you, I do have to tell you one thing. You are, I mean, a personal story, really the embodiment of what this Obamacare, Affordable Care Act was all about. But again, I'm very concerned that these stories don't touch people. Republicans I'm talking about, especially the one on Staten Island who is fighting tooth and nail to be the only member of the New York City delegation to oppose, to favor repeal and replace. How do you reach a guy like that, Sarah? You're crying on video. Your husband's tossing a Frisbee to the dog because he feels good again. He's alive because of Obamacare. How do you tell Dan Donovan that?
It's frightening. I wish that I could say that I thought this was going to reach him. I think when it's proven that it hasn't reached him, I think we'll have our answer in black and white, that there's not a touch of human compassion left in any of these politicians. And when they vote yes to pass the Republican replacement plan, it will be incredibly plain, because there's no way that anybody with a tiny bit of heart could pass this plan. I don't really think in my heart and hearts this is going to touch him. We just learned today that he has a meeting with Trump tomorrow to talk about his quote-unquote concerns about the replacement plan, and we're pretty sure that's all for show, because he's one of the few. They put out a list of on-the-fence Republicans, like who's still wavering in their support of the bill, and he was on that list. And since they put out that list, a good number, especially of the New York Republicans, have come out and they've said no, they're not going to they're not going to support the bill. Now, this vote is presumably coming down on Thursday, so the clock is ticking, and he's still on the fence. And he had said that he was going to wait. First, he said he was going to wait until the CBO score came out to weigh in. It came out. It was devastating. Well, he's still on the fence. He said, I'm going to wait until I go home and I speak to my constituents and I hear their stories about how this is going to affect them. Here we are.